Hello?
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome to You Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson here with Jory Epstein. Got a big show for you today. We're going to be talking a little bit about the recent extension of Dexter Lawrence. We're going to get into a little bit of the Andrew Luck controversy that's starting to bubble up very unexpectedly on a Monday in May. And then also we're going to look at the fifth-year options one more time from a different vantage this time. Players who had their options declined, but we think might actually have a future a la Josh Jacobs, Daniel Jones, some of the multitude of players in the past who had their options declined and it worked out for them in a very positive way. Bring in Jory Epstein. Jory, I hear you're sitting on pillows. Is that correct?
I can neither confirm nor deny. Let's just say when you're podcasting from different places, like, you got to get creative. But what's important is that the show goes on. And I'm excited. When you mentioned the topic we're going to go over today, I was like, that makes so much sense. I would not have thought about it. But that's why you are so good at what you do, C-Rub.
Well, we're also going to jump into, at the end of the pod, for those who are interested, Jory did an interview with Nick Bosa. So be sure to stick around for that. Look, first and foremost, I think we should talk about this Dexter Lawrence extension. Obviously, 4 years, $90 million. What I think is, it's interesting because we were guilty of flaming Dave Gettleman on this show in the past. And I do think he deserved it in some respects. I don't think there's any denying that. However, it would be unfair if we did not point out that now three technically cornerstone pieces of the New York Giants franchise, at least two cornerstone pieces. Dexter Lawrence signs this long-term deal. Daniel Jones signs that long-term deal as their franchise quarterback. And then obviously you have Saquon Barkley, who's coming back on a one-year franchise tag. Those are three pretty important pieces to this Giants future. And Dave Gettleman, I got to give him credit here, got fired under look, it was a lot of criticism in New York surrounding Dave and a number of things he did with the team. But I will say this, he definitely picked some players that are going to factor into success moving forward for Brian Daboll and that entire franchise.
Yeah, I think you make a good point because you've got sort of like three different scenarios going on with the players you mentioned. Saquon, it was pretty clear how good he was. There's the injury since, but that was sort of like, I don't know if that's Gettleman or is that just like, he's Saquon. With Daniel Jones, though, you might think like he's not the best quarterback in the league. He's no Patrick Mahomes. But when you think about how many players flame out from the first round every year, Daniel Jones is absolutely above average, not just in terms of the quarterbacks that are being picked, but also in terms of how first round picks pan out for their teams. And then Dexter Lawrence, I'll say, I mean, I think about it very, very different scenarios in terms of what their off-field challenges were. But when you think about the Jalen Carter pick we've been talking about the last few weeks, and it's sort of like, what are the off-field issues and are they going to be a risk worth taking? Like, Dexter Lawrence had the performance-enhancing drug issue where he wasn't able to play in those Cotton Bowl games. And so you had to be a little bit like, eh, what was going on there? It wasn't sort of like a person-to-person, like, violence issue, but there were questions about how did this happen?
Right.
And he's not only been on and off the field. He's just the type of player you want. And, I mean, I also think just the defensive lines in the NFC East right now, it's like, dang, when you've got those guys that they're shoring up with Dexter Lawrence, then you see what the Eagles just did. They already had the best defensive line, arguably, and now even more so. And then the Commanders, too, like extending Daron Payne. I know we'll get to the Commanders more later, but good luck to guys like Dak Prescott in a division like that, because there's quite the defensive lines in that division right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's fascinating is you are starting to see not just edge players now get money. Tackles get money. I remember when Ndamukong Suh did his deal years ago and he breached the $20 million line. I wrote this piece, I referred to it multiple times where, you know, league sources, paraphrasing here, like, what do we pay quarterbacks now? Like, this is crazy that you know, defensive tackles, basically, even if they are dominant, are getting over $20 million. Well, no, that's now, if you are a top 10-ish defensive tackle in the league, you're going to command $20 million and up. I do think it's fascinating the way teams are starting to allocate their money, and you can see where it's shifting away from running backs, where it's shifting away from you know, I think some safeties get paid. I think others, it's definitely been one of those positions where an elite few do, but teams play hardball more often than not. I mean, you have to really be basically a top two or three safety to absolutely secure the bag. But the positions where you see money filtering out, this is where it's going. It's going to positions like defensive tackle. It's going to guard. That's why guards are getting paid, by the way, because now they're matched up against $20 million defensive tackles, and that matters.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. And I think just winning at the line of scrimmage and in the trenches, as we talked about on recent episodes, is so important. And the more of a passing game it becomes, the more important it is to sort of like have that pass protection, but also try and bust up that pocket. So I think that the Dexter Lawrence contract makes sense given the trends of the league.
And as you said, he is a good story too, in terms of, you're right, there was some risk there. I do remember him at the combine having that kind of personality coming out of it when you talk to teams and they, you know, they'll bring up what their favorite meetings were, their little short 15-minute meetings. And he was one of those meetings where there were a lot of teams saying, like, this guy's personality is really magnetic. He's somebody that, you know, you definitely want to bring into the organization. He'll be great from a leadership standpoint. He'll be great from a locker room standpoint, just in terms of just the vibe. You know, you don't want a bunch of, I hate to use the phrase negative Nancy's in there, but you know, you get people in there that don't always have the most positive, sunny attitude. And pretty soon the whole team is, you know, it can slide off a cliff pretty quickly. He's the opposite of that. It's a good story. It's worked out well. I think it bodes well for the Giants that they have these building block pieces. There's still a lot of work there to be done. You look across the team and there's, you know, Andrew Thomas. There's a lot of talent there to like, even though we kind of dogged the Giants somewhat last year in the success. And we're like, how real is this? There are some real players. And I think that front office, if they continue to layer in talent, Dallas better be worried. I think Philly better be worried. Like, you know, Washington better be really worried because, you know, you're fading quickly behind this group. Yeah, good signing for the Giants and good for that defensive tackle market if you've got one. Lock them up early if they're worth it. You're going to pay hand over fist. Andrew Luck, this is a weird story. I mean, it's not really weird. I think Jim Irsay's involved, so it's not that weird. But a report came out.
That means it is weird because anything with Jim Irsay involved automatically becomes weird.
Well, he's already got Joe Montana in the fold, so, you know, there's no reason for him to be upset. Not really. But look, there was a report that came out suggesting that the Washington Commanders reached out to basically every, you know, potential quarterback moving forward inside of the 2022 season. They're basically saying, we got to resolve this quarterback problem. And one of the names that popped up was Andrew Luck, which is interesting, obviously, because Luck's now been retired a number of years. If you've seen him, he looks physically different than he did when he played. Kind of looks just like a normal guy now. That's what's remarkable to me. Looks like he could be teaching history classes. And yet Washington reportedly was desperate enough to reach out to him. Now Jim Irsay's pissed off about that. He wants an investigation into this. He wants to get to the bottom of whether or not the Washington franchise tampered, because Luck, that's the interesting thing about Luck. When he departed, Irsay didn't make Andrew Luck give back. It was like $37 million worth of like signing bonus money. I think it's off the top of my head, but I want to say it was in the 30s. That they could have clawed back when he retired. That was a lot of signing bonus money. And to my knowledge, he's never returned it. They've never asked for it back. It was what it was. And his health, you know, changed what the future really was for Andrew Luck in the franchise. That's probably part of why Jim Irsay's pissed. He's like, look, if anybody comes, you know, at Andrew Luck, it's us and nobody else. And by the way, we've had quarterback problems and we've left the guy alone, ultimately. Just one more thing. With Washington, you know, the great thing is there's going to always be a dividing line from this point on. It's going to be BDAD, you know, before Dan, after Dan. Okay. And before Dan, when I say before Dan, I mean, before Dan sold the team, all this bad stuff is, everyone's going to say, that's BD. That's BD stuff. That's like, come on, that's in the past. We're going to bring this up. This is AD. It's AD. We don't do things like that. AD.
During Dan?
Yeah, okay, that's better. DDAD, during Dan, after Dan. That's even better. I love it. What do you think of this? I mean, this is just, I mean, it smacks of desperation, Although I can't lie, like if I'm sitting there going, we got to solve a quarterback problem, what are our options on the table that don't involve signing, you know, trading for somebody and giving up assets, drafting someone and giving up assets? I mean, if you think he's free and out there, sure, give Andrew Luck a call. But maybe if this did happen, make sure you understand that his contract has been tolling and he is perpetually a member of the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I think what's funny about a situation like this, again, Jim Irsay is what made this weird, because if you look at the ESPN story that this all circulated from, the headline is "Why Washington is All In on Sam Howell as its Quarterback." And then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 graphs down. I mean, again, when I initially searched it on ESPN, I was like, where even is this mentioned in the story?
Right.
And it talks about who they were interested in and it says, even so, they didn't feel the same urgency that they did last offseason when they called every team that might have a quarterback available. They even phoned about retired Andrew Luck just in case. And then it traded for Carson Wentz. That's the next thing it mentions. So basically saying that, like, oh yeah, the Colts, who they got Carson Wentz from, they also asked about Andrew Luck just in case last year. And those were direct conversations when you know they talked about a quarterback because they got a quarterback from the Colts. So no one is saying right now, oh, these guys who say that they want Sam Howell actually want the guy who's taking classes over at Stanford to come back and come across the country. So I'm really glad that Jim Irsay wants to clarify this. I do think that Andrew Luck is under contract with them, the more Jim Irsay tells it to us, the more I feel like I have to doubt it, because why are you getting defensive about this? But he makes it fun. It's May. We don't have the schedule release yet. Like, you go, Jim Irsay.
Well, Irsay makes it sound like, too, I feel like the lack of clarity here is, as you said, did you bring up Andrew Luck, like, in conversations with Chris Ballard? Like, is that the insinuation here? Or is, because Irsay's making it seem like, well, wait a minute, you know, were they talking to Andrew? At least the way he's approaching it makes it seem like, I mean, if you're tampering, you're calling Andrew Luck. You're calling Andrew Luck's agent. You know, you're that's how you're tampering. You're not asking Chris Ballard, like, hey, do you think that guy's still available? There's not a lot. Look, Irsay is so prone to flying off the handle about quarterbacks right now.
The sentence was literally right before, immediately after that sentence about Andrew Luck. They ultimately traded 2 third-round picks to Indianapolis for Carson Wentz and his $28 million cap hit. If anything, you should be like, by the way, if you called about Andrew Luck and you took Carson Wentz, thank you, because you did the Colts a favor. So I think that that is just quite the win for the Colts on that front. But look, I think that also you have Jim Irsay, who he just really wants to engage his fan base right now. And he really wants to say, like, we got the quarterback you need. We've had quarterbacks in the past. Like, trust me, remember this Andrew Luck guy. I found him. Okay, I drafted him first of all. I got you him, and now I'm going to get you Anthony Richardson. I think it's sort of this reminder of, like, here's what's possible. Just trust me.
Yeah, Andrew Luck, that was a tough pick to make, right? That was so controversial.
Super tough. At the time. Brilliant.
At the time that they found him and everyone said generational core. I mean, he was Trevor Lawrence. Before Trevor Lawrence, it was Andrew Luck. And before Andrew Luck, it was, you know, Peyton Manning. And before Peyton Manning, it was John Elway. Like, come on. Like, these are not exactly the most difficult picks on earth to make. And, Irsay continues to be a source of
hilarity.
Yeah, something. He's something, man. I don't know. It's getting wilder and wilder, I feel like, with him. And I'm nervous for what could happen if Anthony Richardson does not pan out. I'm very nervous how that story will then be played, because I just want to see, I don't want Anthony Richardson to pan out. Given all the gifts, I mean, it would be great for the NFL if he maximizes every, I mean, like, if he becomes a Josh Allen type, which is what the raw skills compared to, having two Josh Allens in the league, or two Anthony Richardsons in the league, is monumental. But if he doesn't pan out, I'm very curious to hear how Jim Irsay extracts himself from where he is now, which is, I think we both agree, right in the thick of, like, him kind of being like, well, I played as much a part in drafting this guy as anyone else. He's here because of me, right? Doesn't it feel that way?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he wants the credit. If not, I mean, I don't know that he's going to take the blame if not. And that's the thing about being owner is you don't have to. You get to keep your job. But I definitely think he wants to take the credit and all these ideas of, oh, the Colts were high on Anthony Richardson and thought he should be the first one like months ago. It's like, maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. Yes, maybe they thought he was the most physically gifted one months ago, but I don't know. Anyone who tries to tell you that in a draft like this, I'm like, you probably should just say, like, we did our homework, and after we did our homework, here's the conclusion we came from given our position, and oh, we still saved draft capital. Now let's go shoot for the stars.
I kind of hope that tampering now is like, this is where we're headed. Like, we're just going to constantly call for tampering investigation because there's so much of it going on. And obviously, the Dolphins got nailed with the Tom Brady, Sean Payton stuff. But
the Eagles, you know, came after the Cardinals.
The Jonathan Gannon. Right. Yeah. You know, you got the Jonathan Gannon stuff that affected draft capital, you know. And so, great. Awesome. Let's just go ahead and do this now. Let's make sure that we call out every potential bit of tampering possible, especially when I most especially would love the, you know, when we head into free agency and like the second that pre-negotiation or pre, you know, the window that opens up where you can call the agent to talk about a player and instantaneously we have deals that are like rolling out the second right. That happens. Let's start investigating that now too. I mean, you only need to come to the combine to know what tampering looks like. It's ridiculous.
I also just love this idea that, like, okay, we talked last week about how Howie Roseman, like, went after the Cardinals. And we're like, oh, you bet I'm getting a draft pick out of you if you talk to my defensive coordinator before the Super Bowl. I'm now picturing this world where there's, like, four or five teams who are like, we are going to use this system the same way we use the compensation pick system, all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And you know that, like, you could probably get away tampering with, I don't know, the Chargers or the Bengals, whoever the teams are. But if you try and mess with the Eagles, if you try and mess with the Bucks, like, God help you, because you are going to have to pay for it. And it's going to create this, like, whole other level of competitive implications.
When I wrote this piece on Howie last week, that kind of came out of the whole, you know, being annoyed wasn't even really a thing when we kind of got to the bottom of it. But I was talking to a GM, and he said to me, he was talking about the Gannon tampering stuff. And he goes, I swear to God, he's like, I really think that, you know, how he's saying that that's ownership level stuff. He's like, but I have no doubt that he did that just to up his draft compensation. He was like, I would not. He's like, it's classic. It's like, it's just, it's, right. It's a, and he said, you know, it would have been.
He doesn't care about fining you, but if he can get a draft pick.
No, if he can get a draft pick, like this guy was like 100%. I believe, you know, in my heart that he did this to try and improve his draft compensation. And if they could have kept it quieter, you know, much quieter than it really became, it came a much bigger deal, a much more reported deal. But he kind of felt like it was one of these things where they kind of tried to keep it quiet and then just sort of run over it with a speedboat once the news kind of came out. And unfortunately, you know, it was far more fascinating than people in the organization might have initially realized. But yeah, I did think that was funny, though, that the conspiracy theory is that absolutely this was Howie pressing this because he wanted to, you know, get better position in the third round. Yeah, and it worked, right? We'll figure out how big of a deal that tampering charge was later when we're able to delve into the draft and look back on it in a couple of years. That said, we're going to get to our salvageable fifth year declined option guys after the ad break. So let's go and get a word from our sponsors. We'll come back on the other side. All right, we're back on the other side. We're going to talk about these fifth-year options, but we're coming at it from a different angle. We've seen in recent years a number of players have their fifth-year options declined, and it actually worked out really well for the players. Josh Jacobs with the Raiders gets the franchise tag. Saquon Barkley with the Giants, again, franchise tag. And then Daniel Jones does the franchise quarterback deal after getting his option declined. I think first, before we get into this, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about players from this year's class. It was a record class that was declined. What players are salvageable, potentially, you know, franchise tag candidates or long-term contract candidates coming out of this. But we should first explain to people the change that happened with fifth-year options. So 2018, new CBA comes in and it changes fifth year options when they get picked up by teams. Previously, were only guaranteed for injury. So you could cut players right up until that fifth year, as long as they weren't injured, you could cut them and not be on the hook for that fifth year salary. And I, one prominent one that I remember was like Robert Griffin was a player that came up, you know, going in from his fourth to his fifth year. 2018 basically said, if you pick up a fifth year option now, it's guaranteed, period. Like it's done. You're locked in. That salary's locked in. And that put teams in a position where they're going to have to make hard decisions. In the past, almost everybody got their fifth year option picked up because teams were like, oh, it's not working. I always cut them. Whatever. It's no big deal. Now, no, you don't want to be on the hook for those salaries. So more and more teams are making difficult business decisions, especially when players are right on that line and saying, well, we'll deal with it, you know, after the fourth year. And I think that's what happened to some players in this class. So, you know, I want to run through a few different players, but first and foremost, you tell me when you looked at this group, and I think I focused in on, let me see here, I count them. There's really six guys that I think are extremely interesting in the group, but you look at it, you tell me who was the one to you that really popped and you thought there's going to be, you know, Someone's going to make out here. Either the team is going to luck out having walked away, or the player is going to have a massive windfall on the other side of this.
Yeah, to me, it was pretty clearly Chase Young with the Commanders. And I wasn't sure I would feel that way at first. But then I start looking and it's like, I don't know that them not picking up his fifth year option means they don't believe in him. His fifth year option would have been $17.5 million, which is basically like the fifth most expensive salary at his position. If you look at the average annuals per contract, you've got Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, Leonard Williams, and Von Miller like actually above him, then Cameron Jordan's right there at 17.5. So I think they're like, well, he's had injuries in the past and we just agreed to pay Daron Payne this money. Maybe we shouldn't guarantee him this money that we're going to be on the hook for, injury or not, and let's go motivate him. But I think that to me, when I considered most likely to rebound, I considered one, why did they end up in this place? Like, what has been their issue in the past? For him, knee injury, which as we always talk about, year two after a knee injury rather than year one is better. Number two, what are the pieces what pieces do they have around them? Because if you're playing for a team like the Cardinals that might not have the talent right now, they might not have the motivation to like go all out winning and getting the talent around you, it's going to be harder than if you're playing on a line with Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne right beside you. So I think that's really helpful. And then I think what's interesting to me is then it becomes okay, what happens if he does rebound? And I almost see, based off what they just paid Daron Payne, this situation where I think he has the opportunity, like physically and just when you look at the timeline of what's happened and why the team would have made this decision, to get back to being one of the best players, not necessarily like up there, but definitely worth that next contract. And I think if so, he prices himself out of Washington.
Maybe they've just put the franchise tag on him at that point and try to, you know, figure it out. It would really depend on what his season looks like. But, you know, you mentioned Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne. I think that factors into the situation. You paid both of those guys huge contracts.
Right.
You have Montez Sweat on the other side who's entering his fifth year. He's going to play out his fifth year option this year. So you've basically taken your two pass rushers, your edge rushers, and you said, okay, we're going to kind of have a derby in 2023. You're both now, you're at the end of your contracts. Chase Young, you're going to play out the fourth year, it's over. Montez Sweat, you're going to play out the fifth year, it's over. Chances are one of you is getting tagged, right? One of you is going to either get signed to a long-term extension or get tagged. Maybe they're thinking we can do a giant situation where we can get one to sign the long-term deal and then the other one will tag. I highly doubt you pay all four across the front, but... Yeah. You know, let's see if Sweat comes out this year and Chase Young comes out this year and they both have 17, 18, 20 sack seasons, probably not trying to let either of those guys walk. You're probably trying to figure out, hey, we're going to have to pay both. Screw it. Let's do it. It sounds completely unlikely, but you're not paying a quarterback right now. So maybe you can get away with it. I'm with you. I think Young is clearly the one that you look at and you're like, well, this is a number two pick. He had a really big rookie season, clearly showed what he had to offer. But I think some of this, too, will lean on the medical.
It's
remarkable that it's taken this long. They clearly had much loftier expectations in terms of when he would get back from the knee injury and what he would be able to do when he got back from the knee injury. And now they're just staring at basically 2 years and saying, you haven't been on the field really, basically, since you're a rookie. And you really haven't produced basically since you're a rookie, which I think is most important. Other teams, though, definitely were surprised. I was talking to an AFC GM, and an AFC GM who has a top-end defensive asset on his line and would like nothing more than for Chase Young to somehow make it to free agency to show that, hey, he is recovered. He can still play at that high level and somehow get to free agency. Like, he just flat out was like, we would sign him. And like, we, you know, judging on how 2023 goes, we would love to be able to add him to our mix. I don't think he's alone in that. I think there are a number of teams that would love to see him rebound, them get stuck in a situation between Sweat and Young. And by the way, if you tag one, the other can just walk. So if they both have huge seasons,
right,
whoever doesn't get the tag, just go to free
agency. They're making more money elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Just go to free agency. Like, don't screw around. Like, you know, go get your money. And those are premium positions. So I'm with you. I thought Young was the one that really popped. A couple others that I wanted to talk about. I want to circle back to Jordan Love real quick. I hadn't really thought about this until it's funny. I was working on the Howie Roseman story. I was talking to a few different people. And one of those conversations, we got into it on Jordan Love. And I brought up the point like, oh, the Packers are hedging and they're hedging. And that's probably not a good sign. And this guy said to me, he goes, well, it's really a bad sign on both sides. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, Jordan Love just hedged. He's like, you know, think about it. He didn't bet on himself in this situation. Betting on yourself is saying, screw you. I have 22 million plus if you include the price of the tag. That's going to be due me the next two seasons. I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to, you either pick up the tag. And if you don't pick up the tag, then I'm going to make out huge. If you do pick up the tag, I'm going to get my $22 million, $22 million plus in salary. I think it's like $22.7 million, something like that. And instead, they cooked up this plan. You know, the Packers cooked up this plan to sign him to what was effectively a one-year deal in place of the fifth-year extension. But really now they're only on the hook for, what's it like, 15 million plus. They're in a position to potentially save $7 million over the next two seasons. I didn't think about it. He was right. Like not only is the team going, we're not entirely sure that this guy's going to work out. You also seem to have, it's like the quarterback's like, I'm going to go and try lock in some money because this might not ultimately work out. Yeah, that's kind of crazy when you think about it from that standpoint, that neither side really is 100% sure that this is going to work. The quarterback's not 100% sure. The team's not 100% sure. I don't know how often those situations work out well in 2023 when neither side seems fully ready to bet on either themselves or the player.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute point that I hadn't thought about, of like, anytime we're considering something from one side and being like, either is a good or bad move, it probably means something about what the implications were for the other side, because there's a degree of zero-sum game in negotiations. I also think that we've gotten like a little bit ahead of ourselves at points, being like, everyone needs to go for max, get everything they're worth, bet on themselves at all times. Maybe they don't. Like, maybe it's okay for a guy to be like, I want to take a little bit of a team-friendlier deal. Now, only if they want to. They shouldn't have to. And I don't like when the teams try and pressure them to. But like, okay, if you're Josh Allen and you want to stay there for the long haul and you're fine being locked up, you're Patrick Mahomes. Again, if it was the player's decision versus an agent or team or someone making this decision and or sort of manipulating them into it, I don't have a huge problem with it. And also, if you're Jordan Love, like, this is not a Lamar Jackson when he's like, I know what I can do. I've shown it in the NFL. Jordan Love doesn't. Even if he believes in himself, he hasn't had a chance to show it. Also, it's not like you're giving him like the best assets to work with in terms of offensive line and pass catchers. And so if you want to say like, hey, my success isn't fully dependent on my own self, because in this game of football, yes, quarterback is the most integral and impactful position on the field, but there are still guys around you. And at some point, even the best quarterbacks, if they don't have the right group around them, or they don't have the right coaching or scheme, or the defense isn't winning, all of that, like, it's going to impact the likelihood that they can do it. So I think for a guy who hasn't played at all yet, take a little bit of money. I don't know. Like, I agree with you that he's not betting on himself. I also think that like, we should give guys the ability to make that decision. And I guess when this really peaked was like the Jalen Hurts conversation about money is good, championships are better. And one, Jalen Hurts still got money. So was he like the most relevant spokesperson for that? I don't know. But I think that there are different ways to do a deal that work for you. And I also think like, hey, you win a Super Bowl. If you are Jalen Hurts and you win a Super Bowl, which you can't bank on, well, then there are endorsements, et cetera. So I don't want the teams to pressure players into this. But if the players say like, I want to make sure I have this, I want to make sure that I can do something for my parents, I want to make sure I can do this, I'm okay with that.
Money is good. Championships are better. Spoken like a person who has money. Like, come on.
Right,
it's a lot,
right.
Lot easier to say that on the other side of a record study contract. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. I just think it's interesting because I was only approaching – I just approached it from the team standpoint. And I never thought about, well, actually the player's kind of hedging here too and making sure he walks away with something. What's interesting to me –
I think it's smart because, like, if you had to guess right now with Jordan Love – not having played at all, what's more likely that based off the history of quarterbacking that Jordan Love all of a sudden is the guy or that it doesn't work out? And I don't mean the history of Green Bay's last two quarterbacks.
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, look, I would say the likelihood of it not working out is much higher than the odds of it being something that comes to fruition. He's just a great quarterback because they've had enough time to assess him, right? They're not working with a blank template here. They've seen him in practice for years. And so they're kind of like, let's go ahead and hedge our bets here. Well, they're doing that based on information. It's not just lack of snaps. They get to see him in practice. They get to see him in the offseason. They have a better handle on what he's like as a locker room guy or person, what's going on off the field and all that stuff. So, you know, maybe if Love's being realistic, he's also saying, well, if, you know, they don't necessarily fully believe in me, you know, what does that say about what can potentially happen with the players around me? Do they believe in me? I mean, there's other factors beyond just...
Right,
I mean,
they could blow it up and rebuild after a year.
Yeah, you have no idea. And he's also, remember, he's rolling the dice here on... He's got to work with the same young receivers that Aaron Rodgers had to work with. He's got to work with a new tight end. You know, there's a rookie tight end in there now. It's, you know, a line that has not always been healthy. There's a lot to contend with, too, that can affect Jordan Love, whether or not he plays well just on his own. But it'll be interesting. I know this is technically he was a declined fifth-year option. They gave themselves an option in a different way. Jordan Love, regardless of how this works out, he's going to have another opportunity elsewhere because he's a former first-round quarterback. First-round quarterbacks always get a chance to play on another NFL team. Maybe not necessarily start, but there will always be a Washington that's needy. There will always be some other team that's needy, and he's going to get a chance at some point. So moving on. All right, so we'll speed through these. I want to get to your Bosa interview to close this thing out. But this is sort of a group to me where I'll tell you what. We'll start with two linebackers that I think realistically if they don't have their options picked up – or excuse me, they don't – they play this out. They don't have a tag put on them and they're just let go to free agency. There's definitely going to be some interest from a field. And I think it's Jordan Brooks with Seattle, Patrick Queen with Baltimore. Really interesting because Jordan Brooks has been a really good run stopper for Seattle. Clearly a talented player, clearly someone that I think the arrow was pointed up until he suffered the knee injury in January. And maybe that factors into this decision. I think he would, unless he just completely craters this next season, I think he would be a player that would definitely be in line to make plenty of money in free agency. You've talked about it in the past. It takes players typically a year to fully recover, get back to themselves coming off of an injury like that. Maybe that's what Seattle's kind of baking into this. They're sitting there going, well, look, he's probably not going to look like himself completely in 2023. Maybe that'll depress his market. And because of that injury, let's not go ahead and already kick in the salary in 2024 for him. But really monumentally talented player that I think has value. And then Patrick Queen, another player for Baltimore, who I think once Roquan Smith got in there, he really factored into the pass rush game. I mean, he was a player that started to pop and you're sitting there going, okay, well, he's getting pressures, he's getting sacks. You start to see the upside, the things that you expected. Doesn't have that option picked up. I wonder if the fact that they signed Roquan Smith to this huge deal had something to do with it. Lamar Jackson obviously signed to a huge deal. Now you're going to have to start to make some decisions. But I think he at least showed you put him into a linebacking core where maybe he's not Superman, but, you know, he's a second fiddle type player. He can definitely impact the pass rush. He's a player that I think if he has a decent, like just a solid 2023 and somehow gets to free agency, there's going to be some people lined up for him.
One of the factors in whether they sign a fifth-year deal is who else are they bringing in? And so I think that's the same thing in Baltimore. I think it's like that in San Francisco with Javon Killa. Would they have signed Hargrave if they felt good about Kinlaw? No. But also now that they signed Hargrave, they're not going to re-sign Kinlaw or guarantee him that money right away. And so that doesn't mean that these players can't do anything, but it's like what was working best for their team based off the timeline and the salary cap allocation that the team wanted. But it doesn't bode great for a guy when his team trades for someone like Roquan Smith and kind of gives him a lot of money, because if you felt super good about where you were at that position, you probably aren't making that trade.
Well, and not only that, you trade for him, and then, you know, I think you can see Queen, you know, start, I wouldn't say met expectations, but I think his game stepped up. And so you're like, all right, well, schematically, could they, you know, start to do different things with him because Smith was playing, you know, alongside him? Or is he just not the lead guy? Like, he needs to be in there with somebody else. And maybe you don't like that. Maybe you're like, hey, we're not going to pay someone when essentially he's got to have someone else in there to be able to unlock these skills and abilities, or for us to use him in the way that's most appropriate. But the talent's there. It's not one of these situations where you're looking at it and you're like, this is a complete bust. And you know, that's not going to work elsewhere. Isaiah Simmons, the Cardinals, I think is really interesting because he's a player that they struggle, you know, they just like could not figure out where to use him. It was kind of weird because, you know, he comes in out of Clemson, high end athlete. And then you had Arizona sitting there going, all right, well, let's figure out where exactly does he belong on the field. So they start moving him all over the place, different positions. You get into 2022 and it felt like they're like, well, he's a safety. Like, we thought we were getting a linebacker, but he's more of like a box safety type. He's got the athleticism that we can, you know, he can play out in the slot and be able to, you know, have some slot usage as well, you know. And then you bring in Jonathan Gannon. So it felt like he kind of settled into where he was going to be. And then you bring Jonathan Gannon and then you don't pick up this option. So I wonder if like this is Gannon is sitting there going, well, we don't really know how to use him. You know, how do we classify him? Is he definitely going to be a safety? All the athletic abilities there. It's just interesting that this became a player that it was really hard to figure out what his role was. And I feel like that's what cost him. He didn't really figure it out until the end. And then you changed coaches. And now you have this player where who knows what's going to ultimately happen with him in 2023.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because on one hand, I can convince myself into now that he's got Jonathan Gannon there, maybe he'll be able to have a better defined role. And that doesn't have to be better defined, meaning he does one thing. It could be his better defined role is the versatility we thought he was going to have when he was drafted, but maybe he'll sort of settle into the way to best impact the offense and they'll decide he's a cornerstone for their next era under Gannon and under Monty Ossenfort. What gives me pause is the draft capital they have and their understanding of how to stockpile it, given that Kyler Murray isn't going to be ready by the beginning of the season, most likely. And so it's like, well, do you really want to pay all that money to a guy who you might be able to get a similar talent for 5 years locked up next year at the top of the draft because you've got that capital? So again, I think he could have a really good year, and that doesn't necessarily translate to he's staying in Arizona. But also, like you said, he's been moved around so much already that makes it difficult to settle into that rhythm and to sort of like the benefit of a guy in a second year contract is often that he's found that rhythm, understands what he can do. He's not raw to what his responsibilities would be at the pro level. And in some ways, if you don't have your position settled, you are raw.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing too. If he maximizes, say he stays in that sort of box safety role, right? And there's value in that. There's definitely value in a guy like that being able to cover in the slot. If he really takes a huge step forward this year, you really have back-to-back seasons where you're like, oh, they finally figured out what he was. Now he takes this huge step forward in year four. Then he becomes a candidate, I think, for the tag, or he has value elsewhere because now teams are like, oh, now we know what he is. We didn't know all this time. They went through all the dirty work to figure out precisely what he is. Now we know what that is and we can put a number on that. Speaking of players where nobody seems to know what they are, most specifically the player himself, Mekhi Becton, offensive tackle for the Jets to me is probably next to like Jordan Love, Chase Young, like one of these really fascinating decisions that was made by the team. Really good rookie year for Mekhi Becton. Unfortunately, he's barely played the last 2 years. There have been, you know, monumental injury issues. There have been weight concerns. He thinks he's a left tackle. The team's like, yeah, we'll believe it when you're on the field consistently and can actually prove that you're a left tackle. So a lot of stuff there. But the talent was undeniable his rookie year. I remember at one point there was another team that had taken a tackle in that draft. It was a tackle-rich draft. And they're like, oh, the Jets got the perennial all-pro at like 13, wherever he was picked. And just how disappointed they were after that first year. And then it just kind of all falls apart. But you know, a tackle with talent, even if there's baggage, even if it's been a roller coaster, that's going to draw major bidders in free agency. The only problem is, and I think the Jets wonder this too, is we've already had not only the injury issues, but the weight issues that we haven't always been happy with. Do we want to pay a player that we maybe don't even feel like we trust now or know exactly what he is? I can see why the Jets made this decision. I just think other teams, if he plays through a healthy 2023, I could see other teams very tempted by what Becton would bring to the table.
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, he tweets in all caps, like, I am a left tackle. Yeah, yeah. And then you have Robert Saleh ask pretty specifically about it. And he doesn't say like, yeah, that's great. He says, go earn the left tackle competition. And I think that's fair for Saleh to say, yeah, like, you've been injured. Stay healthy, which it seems like, I believe there's reports that he's lost about 50 pounds. And so if that's the case, that could help with his weight. It could also change the way he needs to play. And so you sort of have a learning curve. I think it's fair for the Jets to say that they want to play their best five. I think in some ways you've got, okay, Rodgers being there should elevate everyone around him. Maybe he's able to communicate with his line in a way that previous quarterbacks haven't been able to give those same instructions. You still need the physical aspect, but that might speed up the game for him a little mentally. But the reality is, even though Dwayne Brown comes in and he's old, he's going to be 38 by the time the season starts, he's also averaged over 14 and a half starts the last five seasons, even at his age. And he's reliable. I'm not saying he's got the high end that Becton's got, but if he's reliable, you've got Billy Turner coming in on the right side, and he's someone who Rodgers really trusted in Green Bay. I think that there's these reports that he wants to play left tackle because right tackle puts additional stress on his twice repaired right knee, I believe was what ESPN reported. And after all the Orlando Brown stuff, I just have to question, like, how much of that is you want to be paid like a left tackle and how much of that is you think that physically that's what's best, because we can't separate those two things. Well, so,
sure, you can't. If someone, you know, if you're trying to make that
go tear something in your right knee intentionally so you have to make left tackle money.
I mean, but like, what are you going to say? Like, well, why do you want to move to the left side? Well, because, you know, hey, I got to think about my right knee. It's not, hey, I got to think about my bank account. You know, everybody knows.
I know, but when you tell me you got to think about your right knee and the stress on it, that tells me, okay, are you healthy enough to be on this football field at high level and full speed?
Maybe that's real, too. I mean, let's be honest. Right tackles get paid now, too. So it's, you know, you can still make a ton of money as a right tackle. They need him. That's the crazy thing about this. The Jets really, really need him. They need him to play well. They need him to have a huge 2023.
Yeah.
I think if he does have a huge 2023, I absolutely think they would franchise tag him. I feel like I have a pretty good read inside the organization on this one.
I think you've proven that in recent months.
Hopefully. I would hope in their minds, even if he has a great 2023, the way they approach it is, let's probably not do a long-term deal. Let's take him through a tag. Like, let's go one more year. Like, one after what's happened, year one's great, two and three, failure, injury, weight, like all these different negative things in the assessment. Year four can be great, but you just can't count on year four being great. So, okay, tag him, take him through year five, see if the weight and conditioning stays consistent, right? See if the play level stays consistent, see if he stays healthy. I feel like that's, I would be stunned if he had a great 2023. I'd be stunned if they just ponied up a long-term extension or went hard in the paint on that. I think they would try to get a little bit longer vantage on him, pay him for a year and kind of see how it goes. It's for the level of talent that he has, for the investment that was very real and the belief that they had in him early on, this is one of those positions to me that is, it's sticky. There's a lot of like kind of bad feelings, and you know, there's just a lot that's going on between him and the player, and so between the team and the player. So possible, maybe you just walk from this situation no matter what. Maybe you feel it's a little toxic, but there's no question that they need him to play well in 2023. Aaron Rodgers needs him to play well in 2023.
Right. If they're torn in a year about how to handle him, they should be thrilled, because that means that like he got Aaron Rodgers the protection he needed. The other thing I'm interested in what you think is that you have been really on the front lines of reporting a lot of Jets Rodgers stuff, including that the Jets' decision to get Rodgers isn't only about Rodgers. It's also about salvaging Zach Wilson. Can he be back in a couple of years? How much do you think that timeline impacts what they would do with the left tackle decision? Because on one hand, you could say, well, if they franchise Becton and like this is their 2-year window with Rodgers, why pay the money after that, depending on what happens? But on the other hand, if you're going to give Zach Wilson that chance to rebound, you should probably get him a pretty good left tackle. Now, again, Becton's not there yet, but how much do you think that the quarterback situation and what their projection is of Zach Wilson will impact what they do with Becton if they feel like he's at a certain level that warrants it?
I would like to know what the blocking scheme is, because remember, we're projecting this out. This is down the line. Technically, you don't want to make the decision on Zach Wilson for another 2 years. So who knows what the roster is going to look like in 2 years? Who knows what the coaching staff is going to look like? I would want to see Becton be very proficient in pass protect, obviously. I don't want to say, all right, we got our left tackle landed. He's a great run blocker and he's an okay pass blocker. No, that's not what you want to put on Zach Wilson if somehow Zach Wilson himself becomes salvageable. And then I would say, like, what's the scheme look like? Like, what is the blocking? Is it zone? Like, that's the thing with him. The zone blocking for a player of that size is, and I'm not saying that he can't do it, but particularly considering he's got an injured right knee that he's concerned about, how nimble are you? How well are you moving in space? You know, are you able to block that well as a player of that size, be light on your feet, quick, all these different things? I don't know. I have no clue. I don't think the team knows either. They're like, who knows what we have at this point? So you don't want to let tackle talent go. I just don't know that they trust him enough at this point. And I do think trust has a lot to do with this. I think there's just been a lot of frustration.
Yeah.
And when I say trust, I mean from like the weight and conditioning standpoint, because there's been a lot made from his camp over the last few years about, oh, look at, here's all the workout videos on IG and here's all the weight he's lost and here's a da da da. And what has that amounted to? I don't know. It's it'll be a really interesting one to watch. And it's always, the Jets are always, I mean, it's.
We've given them a lot of airtime recently and every minute of it has been interesting and relevant, I think.
Oh, it's exciting.
And we're just getting started.
Yeah, just getting started. I think it's exciting. I do. I think it's exciting that Rodgers is there. I think it's exciting this team is stacking up the way it is. I'm interested in the Quinn and Williams contract negotiations right now, this whole idea that they're not close. And yeah, it's the Jets being good and relevant and having a lot of talent and potential is I think, great for everybody. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch. You want to take us into the Nick Bosa interview? We're going to flip the Nick Bosa interview to close this out. If you just want to tell listeners a little bit what you and Nick had a chance to discuss and set it up, and we'll take you into it.
So I talked to Nick Bosa recently. We had a good conversation. I thought it was interesting on two fronts. One is what's going on with him, what's going on with San Francisco. They've now got Steve Wilks in there as their defensive coordinator. How similar is their defense going to look? Because we've seen them be one of the best defenses for multiple years now. And then on the other hand, he's got inside information on D'Amico Ryans, previously his defensive coordinator, now going to the Houston Texans. And D'Amico Ryans took Will Anderson Jr. third overall. So what's that going to be like? How does he project Will Anderson fitting into D'Amico's scheme? And then just, we also talked a little bit about his last two defensive coordinators, and Robert Saleh and D'Amico Ryans are both head coaches in the league now. How he follows up with their teams, what he thinks Rodgers, the Jets, and Robert Saleh can do together. So he was great, super engaging. Really enjoyed the conversation with him. It was fun to hear him talk a little bit about how he views his game's growth, especially coming off this Defensive Player of the Year season. So I'm excited that we can include that on You Pod to Win the Game. Nick Bosa joining the pod, and excited to hear what y'all think. Definitely tweet at us and let us know.
All right, let's roll it.
Thanks so much for your time today, Nick. Jory Epstein with Yahoo Sports. How do you as a pass rusher train in the offseason? I mean, what's your routine like and what are your goals in the offseason as opposed to in the regular season?
For me and the training that I do down here in Fort Lauderdale with my brother and our trainer, Todd, is kind of just overall, we have a lot of months to work with. So we go through training blocks of 4 weeks and we try to just build up better as an athlete overall, yeah. Which is improving speed, sprinting, agility drills. And then in the weight room, just increasing maxes. A lot of what I do is 5 seconds of just
right.
Full power, speed, stuff like that. So it's a long off season, but it's fun to see all your numbers go up throughout the year and then see them translate on the field.
Oh, for sure. And you're coming off an 18.5 sack season, defensive player of the year. Where do you want to grow your game even more in 2023?
I get this question a lot, and I kind of at this time of year, we kind of go over our meetings with our defensive line coach and try and find the things that I want to improve. But when I look back at my tape, no matter how good the year was, no matter what my stats were, I could kind of find improvements along each facet of my game. So I kind of just want to continue to take steps in each and everything that I do. I want to keep refining the best moves that I do and maybe add more. And for me, I play on both sides of the line. So I try to like really get my coordination down on each side for each move, because I do certain things on each side better. But I want to kind of get to the point where I'm interchangeable. I could go on a guard at three technique. I could kick out to end on the right side or the left side, and I could hit whatever move that I want to use or whatever's effective that's I've seen on film against that particular offensive lineman.
For sure. Which moves do you think you're better on the right side and which on the left?
I can't tell you that. I can't tell you that. That's a secret. In the NFL, we watch a lot of tape. So, those guys are studying me and they're really good. So they need to figure it out for themselves, but, just each move, inside moves, spin moves, swipes, certain power variations that I use are better on each side. And I try to just, kind of, it's weird, 'cause it's just a coordination thing. Like I'm ambidextrous. Right. But I do feel a little more comfortable with certain things on each side. And that's just from years and years of playing on a certain side, getting comfortable. And I'm lucky because I kind of get to switch around as I please, which is nice.
Right. No, it makes sense, like what your muscle memory builds up. As I was based in Dallas the last 7 years till a couple weeks ago, and when they had Tyler Smith move from left tackle to left guard, they're like, yeah, he's playing a different space, but that's actually easier than switching tackle, because at least it's the same movements that your brain is used to than if you're completely flipping sides. One of the coaches who helped your success the last couple of years is D'Amico Ryans. You were with him for 4 years, coordinating your defense for two. Describe his coaching style to me, and what are the Texans getting in D'Amico?
I think he is, I always knew from when he was a QC, and he was just kind of at the bottom of the totem pole of coaching and my rookie year, and he climbed it really quickly. I always knew that he had the leadership abilities to be that head coach presence, and you kind of need to be a motivator and just a guy that people respect. And whenever you have a former player who is great, a great player, and then comes in as a coach and just kind of commands the respect from a room and is so comfortable getting in front of a room and conveying a message that like really hits home and motivates, that's just kind of a talent that you could build, but you kind of have it or you don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's his biggest strength. Obviously, he's a great defensive coach, but there's a lot of those. And he calls the shots at the right time. He trusts the strengths of his defense. He trusted us as a D-line and allowed us to play free. And I think that helped everybody along the defense. But the leadership ability is one thing that I think the Texans are lucky to have.
For sure. They obviously get the quarterback at two, then trade back up to three to get Will Anderson Jr. You've been a defensive lineman on his staff. What do you think he can do with Will Anderson Jr.? What's the potential there?
I don't know the scheme they're going to go with. I don't know if they're going to stand him up as a 3-4 backer or put him down, hand in the ground, and try and do something similar to what we did. But I've definitely seen Alabama play a good amount. It's kind of tough during season when we're playing to really know too much about the guys in college, but he's been super productive. He's really athletic, and I think they signed Chris Kiffin. I'm not sure who they got as the D-line coach, but I'm pretty sure they're going to try and emulate what we did in San Francisco because of the success we had. And with a young guy like that, you can mold them into a lot of things, and it'll be exciting. I heard he likes to watch tape on me, so it'll be fun to see. it'll be fun to see him try some of my moves out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to see how close he comes. I guess they're not my
moves, but moves that I use.
You're the first one ever in the history of football. I can't claim them. Do you have a sense of how similar your defense will be under Steve Wilks this year?
I'm very interested. I've only talked to him a little bit over the phone and on Zoom. I've heard his meetings. He seems like a really good guy and kind of similar to D'Amico in the sense that he's very respectable and commands a room. But I don't think there's going to be much of a change. I think from Kyle down, there's kind of an understanding of how we do things with Chris Kasarik as our D-line coach. There's always ways to improve, but as a D-line, I'm happy to say that I'll be doing pretty much very similar things than I've done the past 4 years.
Yeah. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
We had the number one defense in the league last year, so I don't think we're going to make any drastic changes there.
Yeah, when you think number one defense and how far y'all went, is it kind of crazy to you when you hear people be like, the Eagles are the team to beat in the NFC? Do you think you guys might be the team to beat in the NFC?
Yeah, I don't get into the first take and good morning football debates. but yeah, I mean, we're going to go play the games and we'll figure it out then. But I think we're improving each and every year, and it takes the best team on a particular Sunday to move on. And first you got to get to the playoffs, but you just got to be on it. You got to be healthy. And I think we've done a good job of that. So, and I think we're going to be pretty excited if we get we're actually playing the Eagles, so we'll get a rematch at them. But it was a tough way to go out last year for us.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And we talked about D'Amico. Obviously, you've got Saleh over with the Jets. Kind of crazy. Your last two defensive coordinators are now head coaches. Do you follow their teams a little more closely, especially now that you've got Aaron Rodgers in New York?
Yeah, I definitely tune in. I think the Jets have done a good job of keeping our kind of scheme in place, obviously, with Saleh. And then you have McDaniels, who's in Miami, and you have I think we have like three GMs that have been
it's hired crazy
from us. So obviously we're doing something good in San Francisco. but yeah, I do. I pay attention to the Dolphins because it's my hometown team, and my friends are always yapping about how they're going to win the Super Bowl, which shouldn't hold their breath on that one. But yeah, it's fun to see the guys that you know around the league kind of move around and see the success that they're having.
What makes Aaron Rodgers so hard to defend? I know you faced him a couple times. I believe you've played him three times as a team since you were drafted, but one of the times you were injured.
He's never out. Like, no matter what lead you have, he could just make some unbelievable throws. And if you give him time in the pocket, then he's going to pick you apart at some point. We've had success against him by not giving him too much time in the pocket, and I think that's the key.
Yeah.
But whenever you have a good O-line in front of him and some receivers that he trusts, he's as good as anybody.
Absolutely. And he got another one of those today with Randall Cobb heading over. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Nick. I appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of your offseason, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. That was great.
All right. Great stuff. I mean, probably a guy that I think is going to be in the defensive player of the year conversation perpetually. You know, I mean, it's funny. The 49ers feel like he's been the best defensive player in football for a couple years running now, you know, and you know, when you would go to put in your defensive player of the year votes the last couple of years, if you would talk to the Niners, they'd be like, it's Nick, right? It's Nick. Like, it's not Aaron Donald. I'm like, ah, you know, like before last year, you're like, all right, let's slow down. Like, come on. Like, but the contract negotiation too, they're going to have to pay it. They're going to have to show, you know, the level of love and the belief that he's the best defensive player in the game, which means, you know, that should translate to him being the highest paid defensive player in the game. So great stuff. Really enjoyed it. Anything else you want to talk about you're working on that's coming this week?
I think that is the one for now. I've got a couple other things in the works that we will tell you all about when they get here. But C-Rob, you've got at least the fifth year option piece.
Yeah, I'm just going to look at, I mean, it's going to be a recap sort of what we discussed on the show in terms of players that have an ability to bounce back and get a big contract coming out of this. So look forward to that. And thank you, everybody, for being on. Remember, we're only doing one day a week now on Mondays. So we will be back next Monday. You can get Jory on Twitter at Jory Epstein. You can get myself at Charles Robinson. You can get our ace producer, Stone Rochelle, at SJ Rochelle. And as always, help us keep Therese Paylor's legacy alive. Check out BreakingT.com. That's T/Therese for the new, crisp, wonderfully designed all juice tea and hoodie. I think you will really enjoy those if you had not had a chance to scoop up the new design. Remember that proceeds from those purchases go to support the Therese Paylor Scholarship at Howard University, as well as the one in his name at Missouri. Check out our new NBA podcast, Ball Don't Lie, featuring Vinny Goodwill, Jake Fisher, and Dan Devine, as well as our new MLB podcast, Bandwagon, featuring Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser, both available wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, 5-star review. Help us out. Recommend us to a friend. Help us grow the family. We will see you next Monday. Peace.